woman who chooses a life of crime can become a monster.
Her world was kill or be killed. And if you're gonna be a killer, be the best.
A ruthless drug lord sends every rival to the grave.
I'm aware of no one that has ever been responsible for as many homicides and as much violence and as much pain and suffering as Griselda Blanco.
A good time girl lets her bad side take over.
She was a stick of dynamite with a slow burning fuse, and it was eventually going to blow.
And the Queen of Thieves kills to keep her crown.
She was kind of like a 1940s version of Charlie Manson.
These deadly women don't play by the rules. They are outlaws. Doing business with an outlaw can have hidden costs.
If you owed her money and you couldn't pay her, you didn't want to pay her, she would kill you. If she owed you money for drugs and she didn't feel like paying you, she'd have you killed.
Anyone that got in her way, anyone that insulted her.
She just didn't care.
I'm thinking if someone accidentally bumped into her on the street, they could be dead too.
A vacationer's paradise. But in the early 80s, the city is riding a different wave.
Money.
Cocaine.
Cocaine,
$50,000.
It was all money, money, money.
It's the hub of a billion-dollar drug industry.
They just couldn't spend it fast enough.
And America's murder capital.
The bullets were everywhere.
A crime-ridden city.
The cops were just outgunned.
Paradise Lost. We had never experienced shootouts with machine guns in shopping malls and shootouts with machine guns in rush hour traffic, but we did experience that with the Colombian drug wars.
Al Singleton lived through those wars as a cop in Miami's homicide division.
Our homicide rate in 1980 went from approximately 300 a year to 600 a year. So life changed dramatically in the early 80s in Miami.
Across the city, ruthless men battled for control of Miami's cocaine trade. But the meanest, richest, most powerful drug lord of them all is a woman. Griselda Blanco, the godmother of cocaine.
I think Griselda rose to the top of the ultra-violent world of drugs because she was the baddest of the bad, and she was a woman.
Before, there had never been a woman with that much power and that much control in the drug business anywhere.
The secret of Griselda's success is a total disregard for human life. Over 100 people are murdered by her hand or her order.
Hey, look, I'm here. How did you go?
Okay.
Don't mess with me. How did you go?
For every killing carried out by her assassins, she demands gruesome proof.
Very
good.
She had to prove her stature. She had to prove her ruthlessness.
But Griselda does the most personal killings herself.
What are you talking about, Griselda?
She gained the nickname of the Black Widow because she had some of her husbands killed.
Damn
when either they disagreed with her or wouldn't do things she wanted. It was not a wise decision to be married to Griselda Blanco.
Griselda Blanco's violent rise to the top of the drug world begins at the very bottom.
She started in Colombia. She came from a very poor family, had a very rough childhood, was prostituted over there.
¿Entendiste, señorita? ¿Le haces caso?
Raised in a slum. She's treated as a commodity to be bought and sold. Age 16, she uses forged documents to escape to the United States.
She decided to stop being the victim and become the victimizer, and that worked out well for her. It didn't work out for very many people that met her, though.
Watching Griselda's rise to infamy was Miami cop Nelson Andrew.
Things just fell into place for her, and she became the number one. The number one in South Florida and Colombia.
Griselda orders murders as readily as other businesses order stationery. But one killing will shock even hardened cops.
Gracias, I did a good job.
It begins when Griselda puts out a contract on one of her own hitmen, Chucho Castro.
Once they determined where Chucho had been living, they surveilled the house. They saw his car leave the garage of his home one day. They decided to follow it.
But the killers don't know that Chucho is not alone.
They did not see the fact that in the front seat of the car next to the driver was his son.
Working Friday and Saturday nights was the hot time. It was going sometimes homicide to homicide. And the greater majority of them were drug related.
Of all the murders, one leaves a terrible mark. Castro is taking a drive with his son, Johnny. He's unaware he's the target of a contract hit, ordered by the godmother of cocaine, his boss, Griselda Blanco.
The van pulls alongside of them. They slide the door of the van open. Start machine gunning the car.
He, of course, was hit, and that's how Johnny Castro was killed. Once he escaped, realized his son had been killed, he drove back home. Really didn't know what to do. He couldn't call the police because he was wanted himself. Took the baby back home. Put ice in a bathtub. Put the baby in the bathtub to preserve him. Spent the night crying with this baby.
Meanwhile,
Rivi fears he could pay for the mistake with his own life.
Do not bring me bad news.
It was very close.
No close, no close.
What's the matter with you?
You listen to me.
You're stupid.
Look at the little son. It was an accident.
You got the boy?
See.
You got the little chiquito?
See.
This is fantastic.
Even a cold assassin like Rivi is shocked by Griselda's reaction.
Griselda had no feelings whatsoever for the fact that the life of an innocent 2-year-old child was taken because of her order.
You shot the little boy.
It's just a heartbreaking story. And when you think about what a shame it was that this baby had been killed and the glee that Griselda took in the fact that they were successful in killing this baby, you know, words can't describe how evil this is.
Criminal profiler Candace DeLong believes the seed for this evil was planted in Griselda's childhood.
Griselda grew up in poverty, her mother turning her out as a prostitute, her mother's boyfriends raping her. I don't think there was anything bad that didn't happen to this woman.
Cruelly abused as a child, Griselda grows up to become the cruelest abuser of them all.
Griselda's upbringing was extremely violent, neglectful, and depraved. That ended up being the very world she became queen of.
But in the mid-1980s, Griselda's empire comes crashing down.
That's your job!
Her hitman, Rivi, is arrested and decides to testify against her. It looks like the godmother is headed for death row. But Rivi is deemed an unreliable witness, and the woman linked to dozens of murders takes a plea bargain in return for just 20 years in prison.
There is no one that deserves to be on death row more than Griselda Blanco. The fact that our case fell apart because of witness problems to this day enrages me.
Griselda Blanco is released in 2004 and deported to Colombia. Today, her exact whereabouts are unknown.
The fact that she has not been killed in retribution by some of her enemies, I will never understand. But that's apparently the situation, and that's just the way it is. And apparently she's living large in Colombia as we speak.
Griselda's world was kill or be killed. And if you're gonna be a killer, be the best. And she was.
Darkness, an outlaw's favorite accomplice. A time to stalk the unwary and the vulnerable.
She was sitting in her suburban San Fernando Valley home. She was reading a mystery book. She felt safe there.
Tonight, lonely widow Mabel Monahan will become a character in a real-life murder mystery.
And into her house comes this just whirlwind and this violence.
Well, this was the most brutal offense
that I can recall in my 30 years of tenure.
In 1953, Detective Harry Strickland was called to this house in Burbank, California. What he found has haunted him ever since.
An aged lady laying on the floor, beaten about the head, her hands tied behind her back, and blood everywhere. Hard to believe that anybody could do that to an old lady.
Mabel Monahan is dead, her home ransacked. But there are no clues to suggest why or by whom.
A search of the home didn't reveal any prints of sufficient value.
To find Mabel's killers, cops will need to leave the quiet streets of Burbank behind and enter LA's criminal underbelly.
Barbara Graham was a very attractive woman. She was very pretty on the outside.
Hello, boy.
But she was utterly amoral. And she used to go out to where the sailors were, by one of the Navy yards.
Like many girls in the dockside bars, Barbara turns tricks for cash.
The sailors called them seagulls because they flocked around the camp, just like seagulls do, you know, at the beach.
A prostitute with a heroin habit, Barbara lives on society's fringe. She's never known any other life.
Well, Barbara was an outlaw from the very beginning. She had grown up very tough, very unloved. Her mother, Hortense, was such a venomous, vitriolic, horrible woman.
As a young girl, Barbara is abandoned by her mom.
Becky, did you? Hey? What's going on? You didn't just come back here, huh?
When she tries to return, she is repeatedly rejected.
Hortense told Barbara when she was a little girl, you're going to be bad. You're just born to be bad.
LA crime writer John Gilmore believes Barbara's abandonment sealed her fate as an outlaw.
I mean, she was deserted from when she was a child. Literally, figuratively deserted.
Barbara grows up to be just what her mom said she would be. A bad girl who's about to get even worse.
Barbara's background as a young girl had a lot to do with the woman that she became.
Barbara keeps the scars from her childhood well hidden, but they are looking for a way to get to the surface. Then she meets Jack Santos and Emmett Perkins.
And these were just, these were just really the LA lowest scum that you could possibly think of.
Career criminal Perkins' latest scheme is a robbery based on a rumor.
The rumor had been around for years, actually. You know, there'd been a number of groups saying, so what's new? And, oh, yeah, that old lady in Burbank, she's got a safe full of maybe 200 grand or something like that.
But to reach the cash, they have to get inside the house. That's where Barbara comes in.
And they knew that this old lady, or they had heard, she would not open a door at night to any strangers, especially men. She might open the door to a woman, so they're backing and counting on that.
To these small-time crooks, Barbara seems the perfect partner in crime. but she's unstable. Behind her seductive eyes is an emotion that's been bottled up for a lifetime, a hatred she is powerless to control.
She was like a stick of dynamite with a slow-burning fuse, and it was eventually going to blow.
In 1950s Los Angeles, an outlaw emerges from the shadows. Lonely widow Mabel Monahan has an unexpected visitor.
She wasn't a kind of person who was inclined to open the door for a stranger.
Hello, can I use your phone, please?
But Barbara Graham was a very attractive woman. And she sure cleaned up really well. And that's how she presented herself to Mrs. Monahan.
But Barbara's sweet face masks a sinister intent.
Can I use your phone, please? My car is broken down outside. I just need to make a phone call really quickly.
Lurking out of sight are three thieves, Barbara's partners in crime.
Mrs. Monahan was still not immediately convinced. But she finally relented and let Barbara in. And that was it.
I don't think that Mabel Monahan had any chance whatsoever.
Barbara pistol whipped her. That could not possibly have been necessary. That was venting rage and fury on that poor woman.
You are a terrible mother! I hate you!
The rage is born of a hatred for her abusive mother, Hortense. For years, Barbara hides her anger behind a carefree facade until she finally lets it explode on Mabel Monahan.
I personally feel that Barbara was attacking every female of authority that she's ever dealt with her entire life.
Social historian Joan Renner believes murder was not part of the plan that night.
I don't think that's what was intended. They thought there was a safe there. They wanted the money. The idea was to get in, get the safe, and get out.
But Barbara's gone.
She was not supposed to have done that. That wasn't part of the plan.
What the hell's going on?
Shocked, Perkins and Santo begin a panicked search for the safe.
They ransacked the entire house, pulling everything out of everywhere.
Find this. Find it. Look everywhere.
Meanwhile, the old lady was on the floor bleeding and her head cracked open. And she wasn't dead yet, so Barbara ran into the other room and got a pillowcase. She stuffed a pillowcase over the lady's head, and then they ripped up a sheet, and Santo had part of the sheet around the woman's neck and was strangling her.
Shut up!
The noise alerts the fourth member of the gang, safecracker Baxter Shorter.
Baxter saw Mabel Monahan on the floor, bleeding profusely from her head. He could see her bleeding through the pillowcase. And he said, this is bad. This is not good at all. This wasn't supposed to go like this. I don't want any part of this. We have to get help. The rest of them were not interested. They just wanted to get out of there.
There's no safe. We're out of here.
What?
We're out of here.
We've got
you. Well, hey, you can't.
Before he leaves, Shorter grabs a utility bill containing Mabel's address so he can call her an ambulance.
He went to a phone booth. He called it in, but the dispatcher got the address, but Baxter Shorter was so upset that he didn't say that the house was in Burbank. And they couldn't find an address like that in L.A. And so no one went out. And her body wasn't found until a couple of days later.
With no fingerprints at the scene, police have no leads. Then an informant comes through with a name. Baxter Shorter.
Well, Baxter Shorter had decided that he would come clean if he got a good deal, to let him go.
Baxter gives up the names of the gang to save his own skin. It will have the opposite effect. Baxter Shorter is last seen being forced into a car, driven by Barbara Graham.
He was taken out somewhere in the desert, never to be seen again. They never found him. Not a trace, nothing. He was declared legally dead 7 years later.
This second murder doesn't cover the gang's tracks for long. Within days, they are arrested at their L.A. hideout. In court, Barbara's pleas for mercy fall on deaf ears.
She even said at her trial, she told the prosecution, "Haven't you ever been desperate? Don't you understand what that is?" And nobody there could relate to that because nobody had had her life.
So they're all found guilty of murder in the first degree and all sentenced to death. That was the conclusion to the trial.
There's only one man alive who can truly judge if that sentence was justified. Former detective Harry Strickland.
Having seen the brutal murder committed by Barbara Graham, her sentence to death for doing this horrific crime was well deserved.
She lived as an outlaw, and now Barbara Graham would die as one. Her last words, "Good people are always so sure they're right."
Barbara's last comment shows her contempt for that part of society and how apart from it she was.
It's just before midnight when store owner Leland Cash begins his journey home.
It was closing time for this little hamburger shop that was by Golden Gate Park.
But the streets of San Francisco can be dangerous.
Stop. What's in there? Give me your... Give it to me. Give me the parcel. Give it to me.
The gunman is Albert Ives. The driver of the getaway car, Bobby Sherrard.
They believed in robbing gas stations, barbecue carts, small restaurants, rolling drunks. They're totally petty crime.
Tonight's target reacts in an unexpected way.
Give it to me. Give me the parcel. Give me the wallet.
The proprietor, he reached into his pocket. Albert thought he was going for a gun. And shot him in the stomach and left him to die in their parking lot outside of the hamburger shop.
Leland's dying hand doesn't hold a weapon. It's a hearing aid.
He had reached into his pocket because he was deaf, and he was turning up the volume on his hearing aid. They just panicked and ran.
Come on, Bobby, let's go. Let's go right now.
For these panicked crooks, a bad night is about to get worse.
I was there in the car, and he was meant to go rob the guy, just like you said.
When they tell their boss.
I heard this bang, and I saw a flash. We killed the guy.
Her name is Juanita Spinelli, and they've broken her golden rule.
She was a stone-cold psychopath who had no use for anybody other than what she could get out of them.
She was cold-hearted. She was the Duchess.
In Depression-era San Francisco, a woman provides a home for the downtrodden and the desperate.
They were all juvenile delinquents. They're all pretty young guys. Came from broken homes.
Head of the household is Juanita Spinelli, the woman they call the Duchess.
You want some liquor, boy? Go, you give him some liquor.
Oh, what about me?
You wait your turn, boy. Sit down.
Juanita was a mother figure to these men, even to a point of cooking the meals, like mom would cook at the stove for the family, cleaning, very much as if she was their mother.
All right, you are going to steal this.
Juanita dispenses more than motherly care.
I'm walking down the street, a little lady, you're going to take it without me feeling a thing. Funny, you fool! I felt every moment of that.
Miss Spinelli ran a crime school.
You show them how to stop.
So that she basically produced professional criminals.
I'm a walker down the street. I'm a lady.
These were crimes to make money.
She smiles at me. She takes the watch. Do you see how that's done?
The Duchess's rule mixes authority with feigned affection.
Gypsy, my sweetie, you did that just right. Gypsy?
Juanita was probably pretty charming. Most sociopaths are. They're good with words. They're good manipulators of people. They play up to people. They make them feel important. And that's how they develop bonds, and people follow them.
The gang's secret weapon is Juanita's daughter, Gypsy. Her seductive wiles are a potent honey trap.
She would come up to a drunk man, put the moves on him.
What's her name?
The gang would jump him, and they'd take his pants. And that was the thing that they did a lot back then because it was embarrassing. The cop would just laugh at him, you know, just go on home in your boxer shorts.
You whore!
Crime writer David Kolchek says while the gang took all the risks, Juanita Spinelli reaped the rewards.
She was able to trick these young men into doing her dirty work.
Watch it.
Hey, everybody.
Albert.
Handing over cold hard cash.
Albert, over here, boy. What'd you get?
Instead of keeping it themselves for a $10 a week allowance.
A wallet. Let's see what he's got in here.
The Duchess rules using just one law.
Come on,
no serious crimes.
She didn't believe in pulling off big crimes, like robbing a bank or a jewelry store. She believed in nickel and diming. She said that they'll never get caught if they nickel and dime.
Murder is no petty crime. Killing Leland Cash breaks the Duchess's golden rule.
We killed the guy.
The Duchess was furious that there was bloodshed, that violence happened, and that she knew that the police were going to be in on it now that somebody was murdered.
He could have been bleeding there for hours. He could still be there.
And this career criminal can spot another danger.
But he didn't have to die. And what are the police going to say, huh?
Bobby's loose lips.
He could still be there, bleeding and dying.
Right? Robert Sherrod was only 18 years old, and he was just basically a kid. He was a kid that should have been you know, at the soda shop stand with his girlfriend in his dad's borrowed car. But instead, he was in this life of crime. And he got in way too deep.
What's gonna happen? I don't wanna go to jail. I don't wanna die.
The youngster's conscience is killing him.
Juanita saw him as the weak link in the group and feared that because he wasn't handling the robbery very well, that he might shoot his mouth off to the police and expose all of them. And she couldn't take a chance on that.
The Duchess knows her outlaw family is threatened.
Okay now, Bobby.
We're gonna make sure
together, she'll do the unthinkable. In 1940s California, crime school boss Juanita Spinelli is losing patience with one of her students. Bobby Sherrard is running off at the mouth about a murder, making him a liability.
The Duchess was afraid that Robert was going to go to the cops.
Pour Bobby another drink.
I don't want to go to jail. I don't want to die.
Bobby.
She was also afraid that if he got caught by the cops for some other crime, that he would spill his guts about that crime.
That's okay now, Bobby.
We could have made sure he wasn't dead.
So she decided that he had to die.
The Duchess flips from mother figure to murderer, mixing whiskey with a powerful chemical, chloral hydrate. It's a drug familiar to forensic pathologist Janice Amatuzio.
Chloral hydrate is a prescription medication, and it's usually used to cause people to go to sleep. Sometimes individuals will place chloral hydrate in alcohol, and this is called a Mickey Finn, also known as knockout drops.
The Mickey Finn was invented in San Francisco in bars. They would give them to sailors that just came off ships, and then they would Shanghai them.
In high doses, chloral hydrate can also kill.
What do you mean, no? He only shot him in the gut.
Relax, Gypsy.
The trust Bobby has for his boss is about to be supremely
Bobby.
Betrayed.
Have another drink.
The Mickey Finn takes rapid effect.
Why are you looking at me like that?
The alcohol potentiates or accelerates the effect of chloral hydrate. An individual may know that something is wrong in five minutes or more.
Why are you all laughing?
They're going to start to feel sleepy.
What's happened?
And then they'll start to feel excessively drowsy.
What have you done to me?
They will usually rapidly lose consciousness. And sometimes we'll just simply collapse.
So immediately the gang beat him up while he was unconscious. They just totally jumped him and just wailed on him.
This is what we do, to squeal.
If that was out of pure anger because he was messing up with the plan or they were just all psychopaths, no one knows.
Get that over here! Come on! First, drop him, get him in! Hurry up! Good! Quit!
Juanita wants to make Robert's death appear accidental.
They took him to a river, took off his normal daytime clothes, placed him in swimming trunks, and then took him up on a bridge and threw him off the bridge into the icy waters below. When his body was discovered, they had hoped that the discoverers would think that he had died swimming.
But Bobby's corpse will tell a different story. He was dead before he hit the water.
He got caught up on some pilings, and he was found the very next day. They did an autopsy on him, and they saw that he had no water in his lungs, so they knew that he didn't drown, and he was possibly a murder victim.
Wanted for two murders, the killers go on the run. But Juanita has broken her own golden rule, and with it, breaks the outlaw bond her gang once shared.
If I were a member of the gang, I'd be wondering who's next.
Albert Ives has a hunch it's him.
Albert wasn't as dumb as everyone thought. He knew that his time was going to be up, and he knew just how violent they could be. So they stopped for gasoline and, you know, have a little pit stop there, and he was walking back to the car, and he heard them talking about a 700-foot cliff. So he turned around, ran through this restaurant, ran right through the kitchen, and out into the woods.
An hour later, near Truckee, Nevada, Juanita Spinelli and the remains of her gang reach a police roadblock.
It's a mountain road, so there's no way they can get off.
Now, everyone just keep quiet. Let me do the talking.
So they pulled them over, and the Duchess tried to bat her eyes and act like she was just a grandmother.
Juanita's charms won't work this time. The Duchess has been betrayed by one of her own.
Albert told them everything. They searched the car, found guns, they found stolen merchandise in the trunk, and they handcuffed her right there.
Once this queen of crime inspired devotion from her subjects, now they join forces to bring her down.
When the gang members go into the witness stand, they end up pointing at Juanita Spinelli, saying she was the one that came up with the idea. She is the one that came up with this murder. She is the motive force behind this murder. She is guilty.
And the Duchess was the first woman to be put to death in San Quentin's gas chamber.
The cruel reign of the Duchess comes to an end with a bitter taste of her own medicine.
The Duchess ruled her family with an iron hand, but the fatal flaw was believing that she could make no mistakes. When mom hurts a child, all the other children have nothing to think other than, well, if she did that to him, what might she do to me? Which is exactly what happened and what led to her demise.
Deadly women scarred society with their lives of crime. Griselda Blanco made Miami streets a war zone. Barbara Graham betrayed a lonely widow's trust. And Juanita Spinelli turned needy kids into killers. They reaped crime's rewards, but paid society's ultimate price. Cast out or killed as outlaws.